Welcome to a special edition of the Movie Film Show. An interview with Eric Marola, writer and director of Berzinski the Movie.
Why we don't develop cancer, all of us, is because we have protective system, we have antineoplastins who will immediately force these malignant cells to die by working on their genes.
So over the course of the last 8 years, annual MRIs have confirmed all that's left of the tumor is scar tissue. So Dr. Berzinski cured me of a brain tumor.
It's as if she had a bacterial infection and Berzinski treated it with antibiotics.
The FDA has made a list and decided who can live and who will die. I guess I didn't make that list.
I've had no chemotherapy. I chose Dr. Berzinski instead after a lot of research. I was told that the chemotherapy that I could have would work for a while, but there was no cure. I've been in remission since 1989.
Now the FDA is saying to me, no, your doctor is a criminal. He should be put in jail and he needs to be shut down. This is criminal.
Hello, welcome to this special edition of the Movie Film Show. I'm Mr. Movie.
And I'm Mr. Film.
Today we have a very special guest on the show. His name is Eric Marola, writer, director, and producer of Berzinski the Movie, a picture that both Mr. Film and I put on our top 10 movies of the year. Hello, Eric. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We both loved the film. This is on our both on our top 10 list, as you know, and we found it very compelling and interesting, etc. Why Berzinski? What attracted you to this story? Obviously, it's a very compelling story, but why spend a good chunk of your life working on this?
Well, for several reasons. I've worked in television and film for quite a while, but always in a post-production sense. And I've always wanted to sort of direct my own documentary film. I've always been very moved by especially documentaries that serve as a sort of an extended role of investigative journalism. And also been sort of obsessed since a child with disease. It's just like one of those. My mom always said I should have gone in to be a doctor, frankly. I'm not one of those guys that's paranoid about germs and nothing of the sort. It's just sort of been a sort of fascination of mine. But I read a book by a guy named Ralph Moss, who is the former public relations director of Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. This guy wrote this book because he was fired for basically blowing the whistle on a non-patentable sort of cancer treatment in the 70s. And he became good friends with the guy that was doing the research, and so he knew what was really happening. And then the leaders of the company were asking him to say something entirely different. And since he was the public relations or the assistant public relations director, you know, he was aware that he was being told to lie. So he just couldn't take it and just blew the whistle and wrote a book about that experience and sort of dived in as his own, took his own role as an investigative journalist and researched other sort of so-called alternative cancer treatments out there that have been marginalized. And Berzinski was in that book. And this book is pretty dated. It came out in the early 80s, I believe. So Berzinski was still very, very young in this whole process back then. But what really stood out to me in the book about Berzinski was that unlike all of the other, whether they're invalid treatments or not, but all the other ones that have sort of been accused of being marginalized, it's usually because it's some sort of natural substance or it's some sort of holistic therapy, which is automatically by the establishment just going to get stomped on. But in Brzezinski's case, here's a guy that had an original, significant, recorded scientific discovery and then applied that to cancer treatment and ran with it, as opposed to, again, being a sort of a lifestyle change, or not that those things aren't important. And it just stuck out like a sore thumb to me. And I just started calling the clinic, and basically, you know, I was working doing special effects and motion graphics for a New York City company. And I started out just thinking, okay, I'll travel the country, interview some patients. My big thing at the time was just getting a hold of the medical records and showing the FDA clinical trial data and comparing them. I figured, wow, no one can call this anecdotal if our own government is supervising it and verifying all the findings. You know, these are large groups of people being compared to other, like chemotherapy. After spending more time with the story, and especially after my interview with Berzinski, when I realized how deep it went in regards to the government corruption and the rigging of his clinical trials, literally, I quit my day job altogether, ran out my credit cards, my wife kept working, and just went full force. The best answer to that question, I know that was very long-winded, is I became totally obsessed with it and just could not put it down once I realized how deep the story went beyond just the scientific discovery that he had made.
That's great. That's great.
Can
you tell us what are some of your favorite investigative documentaries? You mentioned some of those.
Yeah. Oh, like one of my biggest favorites. I was fortunate enough to even join him because we were both on the same festival. But the Daniel Ellsberg story I thought was really exciting. That's maybe not so investigative, but it's still like a really great story about a guy that really stood up, and you get to see the underbelly of, you know, sort of the inner workings of the government. I thought that was really exciting. The Client 9 and Inside Job, those are two recent ones that I thought were fantastic.
Okay.
The Elliot Spitzer Client 9, and those are wonderful, I thought.
Now, the interesting thing for me when I first watched the film was the format and how you kind of laid out this. Essentially, this is an advocacy documentary. As you mentioned, you quit your day job, you put your whole life into this. But you also basically said, this isn't just take me at my word. I'm going to prove to you that this is an efficacious treatment, and then we'll tell the horror story that goes beyond this. Why was it important to have that kind of format? Why was it important to convince me, the viewer, and all your other viewers that this is an efficacious to the extent that you did? I mean, you spent a good 30 minutes, a third of the film, really going through and saying, okay, I'm going to prove this not because I say so, but because there's evidence and it makes sense and there are survivors and some very powerful stories that you give. Why did you decide that kind of format?
Yeah, especially as opposed to what we see in a lot of like Michael Moore documentaries, for example, which are very, you know, emotionally driven.
Right. For a couple of reasons. The first being, I've actually worked on some of Michael Moore's films, and it's sort of that genre of documentary, while it has its place and it's exciting, I just felt like if I'm going to cover a cancer treatment that most of the public doesn't know about, and I'm going to start telling people that, you know, showing them that your own government is, and your own medical industry is trying to make sure you don't know about it, I just felt like most people are going to take that at face value and just dismiss it, because that's sort of how most of us are sort of conditioned to sort of respond to that. And I also didn't want to preach to the choir and preach to people that sort of are more open-minded to it. I really wanted to go after the folks that would normally not give this type of film an opportunity, you know, beyond 5 minutes, and bring them in, I suppose, the best way I can describe part of it. But also, I spent probably the same amount of time as researching the subject matter, I spent looking at all the opposition and the people and that have sort of always opposed him and all of the sort of the tactics they go after. And some of the first ones are the simple ones. Say they go, oh, well, we have no proof that they were really even diagnosed with cancer. It may have been a misdiagnosis, is like the first usual that the very stubborn doctor may say when he first is introduced to this. And the second one is, oh, well, you know, their spontaneous remissions occur all the time, and clearly it's just one of those cases. And then, of course, showing the FDA data with a large group of patients with the same type of cancer, when you have a percentage of them being cured, it's very difficult to write that off as a spontaneous regression. And sort of the joke, funny thing is some of the patients say, yeah, my doctor told me my cure was just a spontaneous regression. And I say, well, if Brzezinski's got the majority of all the spontaneous regressions on the planet, then I guess that's reason enough for me.
Right? Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, it was because, I've been talking to like a major network, for instance, and they're still, they get it and they go, yes, we would go to see him in a minute if we had cancer, but it's just so big and so contrary to what we believe, what we're taught to believe. It's just, we don't know if we're going to take the risk and air this thing. To sort of sum up what your question is, that I knew that most people would go into this thinking it can't be. We would have heard about it by now. The government would have supported him with open arms by now, and all the usual sort of excuses. So I had to sort of, in what I felt was the best way, and I really held back. The second patient in the film, the brainstem glioma patient, never before in the history of medicine has any treatment other than antineoplastons ever cured a brainstem glioma in a child that is inoperable, at least within a controlled clinical trial setting. There are the occasional whimsical flukes that are out there, but in a controlled scientific environment, it's never been done. He's the first guy to do it. And instead of me drilling that into the ground, I step back and just sort of let it go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just tried to be as fair as I could and not be too fantastic about it.
Yeah, it really is, particularly in an advocacy sort of piece. It really is a fine line between being very fact-based and objective and then also saying, rah, rah, this is really great stuff, because you've been immersed in all of this data and these great stories, particularly with these kids and these very powerful stories. And now they're parents and they're adults and living full active lives. So it really is a tightrope. Did you find it to be a real tightrope? I mean, were there moments where you say, ooh, we got to pull back here?
Yeah, it's funny. I did my first cut. I did have a little bit of comedy, and I did have a little bit of sarcasm at points. I did kind of try to make it more "quote unquote" fun instead of feeling so clinical. And I like anybody, when you do your first cut and you sit back and take some time with it, and I realized no, this can't be this way. You're gonna have to keep this really clinical to really keep its integrity, you know.
Right.
So, and I try my best to break it up, at least from an entertainment fat standpoint, because I go through heavy sections with documentation, and then I break it up with some archival footage, and of course the FDA section is extremely dramatic, sort of lifts the audience back into it again, I think, if they're starting to feel a little comatose.
Yeah.
But
can you tell us about I think you self-distributed this picture, right? Can you tell us a little bit about your decision to do that? Why not try to get, I mean, I'm sure you tried to get a distributor of some sort. Can you tell us about that process a bit?
You know, I did the usual route. I attended to film festivals. I entered it into nearly 50 film festivals. I got into, I think, 9.
Wow.
And the ones that I got into, most of them were completely sold out. The one in Newport Beach, I think it's okay to say now, like Dateline NBC showed up and videotaped the Q&A. They interviewed me and Brzezinski, and like, you know, it was a very big event. And we had a lot of all the major players from the film were there. And then, you know, I just sort of wanted to sit back and see, in hopes that the sort of usual route where somebody will approach you. And I did have a good established rep. I don't want to say his name, but he's sold a lot of major films that are on HBO and many Academy Award winning documentary films. Films like The Cove and Man on Wire and Food Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very excited. And he hit the pavement hard with the film and went to everybody. And except with the exception of one of the major, actually one of the major news networks that tends to run documentaries as well, they just didn't want anything to do with it. I don't know. It was just like pass across the board. HBO apparently loved the story. They just told us that they didn't like the way I, quote, handled the film. So you just have all this sort of aesthetic sort of things that, you know, I guess people didn't like. And it is an unusually constructed film when you compare it to most documentaries. And I knew that going in, but I just felt like, again, what we talked about earlier, to maintain its integrity, I felt like it was a decision I was going to stick with. I showed it to a lot of very sort of snobby, you know, veteran documentary folks in a test screening, and they were just distraught by that. I would have footnotes and, you know, things like that in the film. But they were just beside themselves and frustrated. But
you mean back your argument with evidence?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They actually said,
God forbid, no, right?
Right. And again, because no other film has ever done it to such a degree, I felt like, you know what, I think it needs to be done in this case. But to go back to distribution, I just basically decided to start selling DVDs on Amazon and through my own website. It's been pretty well. I mean, I'm not making an outrageously good living, but I'm making a living off of doing it, and it's helping to fund the second film. It's just one of those things. I feel like it hasn't reached its tipping point yet at all.
Yeah.
I just think
So. Now, but, what's the reaction bit? Now, you are doing screenings of it still, though, right? I mean, you're not just selling DVDs. I mean, you're also doing screenings, right?
Yep. Most recently, now the film festivals, and some of whom actually who turned my film down initially, I guess they're seeing it on their own and they're contacting me. And the most recent one is in Sedona, Arizona. They're going to have it in late February. I'm going to fly out and do a Q&A for that. Okay. And we have an outside donor that's really supportive that might help. We're hoping that the PR firm will agree, a really large PR firm, to sort of do a next big push for this. Some other ideas is having full-blown, not just showing the film, but have a big, like, two-day event where we could have, you know, Whitaker and Brzezinski and some other physicians and a bunch of his survivors be able to communicate and mingle with current cancer patients. You know what I mean? So we're just sort of take it to the next level and be really creative and think as big as possible beyond just showing the film. We're bouncing those ideas around as well.
Yeah. But, yeah, much, much different thing. And what's the reaction been like? I mean, obviously, when you go and have an audience, either they're veteran festival goers or just, I know you've shown it at some churches, and I believe, and such. What are the reactions like? Is there a range of reactions, or that it's generally positive? Is it pretty a visceral sort of reaction that you've been getting?
the reaction has been phenomenal. Whenever I've attended a screening and done a Q&A, the management has to kick us all out of there because it goes on for at least an hour. Yeah, and I mean, no, the reaction has been amazing. Occasionally, you'll notice that there's a couple of oncologists there, and I'm standing in by the door as they're leaving, reminding them that if you want to hang out for a Q&A, and they just sort of storm past you. They don't want to even look at you in the eye. And then at the same time, they're like in New York, a group of oncologists from one of the New York clinics who could have been Sloan Kettering, I really don't know, stopped me and said, you know, we saw the ad in the paper. We had no idea who Brzezinski was, but why his name was sort of on our radar is because some of our patients have gone to him recently, and we told them they were not going to survive, but we were ready to give them their hospice slips, and now they're almost out of the woods, and you've done a fantastic job, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, my next question was always, you know, would you be willing to put that on the record? As you can see from the film, there's no board certified oncologist that I could ever get to agree to go into the film and participate one way or the other. In hindsight, I wish I had made a statement about that, because some of the mainstream reviewers were very confused by that. It felt like it was very leaning one side. But again, I was trying to take the high road by not being, oh, nobody agreed to be in my film. But, you know, all the patients I interviewed, I approached all of their former oncologists and said, well, you know, they were clearly terminal. They'd had no other treatment except this treatment. And, you know, would you have any comment at all? Or would you even be willing to, you know, have an email comment, any statement, anything, if you don't want to go on camera? And it was just flat out, we cannot participate in this. That's it. Like, across the board, they were very careful with their words.
So why is there so much resistance from oncologists to participate in any way, either positive or negative?
Basically, every oncologist works for a larger institution like Sloan Kettering or MD Anderson or the like. It's hard to find an independent oncologist. And even so, well, back up. The ones that work for the big institutions, you know, they represent that institution. And if they go on camera, they have nothing to gain and everything to lose by coming out in support of him. And just from good old-fashioned, like, high school-style peer pressure from all of those, you know, their peers will just attack them. A good example, Dr. Nicholas Petronas, whose court testimony is in the film, who flew to D.C. on Brzezinski's accord and on his defense, and I had that long section of court transcript, and it was always, like, sort of on the record but in a private matter in case we ever needed it. But none of them would go public, and that was one of the only times one has. And I've tried to get him in the film, but he will not respond to a single phone call or email. Even Brzezinski's office tried to when I just sort of got desperate to see if anybody could get a hold of him. He will not even call back. To answer your question, you sort of have to jump to conclusions. It's something that I don't try to do. But from what Brzezinski says and what everybody else I've talked to says is, first of all, it's peer pressure from everybody around them. And then you combine that with all the past sort of so-called controversy that surrounds Brzezinski. And most people say, oh, they tried to take his license away. They indicted him. Oh, he was charged for insurance fraud and everything else. When they don't realize that he was innocent across the board in every case, and all those actions were straight out harassment. So anyway, so they're automatically going to be associated with this sort of once called a quack kind of entity. Then you have the fact that these guys are giving out chemotherapy and radiation every day to their patients, and then if they're going to go on TV going, yeah, this it's clearly working. You know, if they came out in support of him and then go back to their 9-to-5 administering chemo to stage 4 cancer patients who don't have a chance with that type of treatment, you know, for like, say, a stage 4 lung cancer patient, it just doesn't happen very rarely. It's like 2% of the time they come out of it. So think about that. They have to deal with that, like coming to terms with that, everything they're doing, not everything, but a lot of what they're doing is outdated and, in fact, you know, has been surpassed. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one thing I've learned is that scientists in general, even if they're like a geologist, I've noticed that scientists are some of the most arrogant of folk. And I don't fault them, but I think it's part of the education process. Like, you become very proud and indoctrinated to be a part of this field of study. And if somebody comes in from left or the right, you know, out of nowhere and tries to tell you what you're doing maybe could be done better, or they tend to react with resistance, even though you'd think, being a scientist and following the scientific method, which means testing and retesting and being open-minded to new ideas. But sadly, you know, it goes back to the flat earth, you know, and everything else that we've dealt with in the history of humanity. Ignaz Semmelweis, great example that I put in the film. There was no money involved in washing your hands versus not washing your hands before delivering a baby after performing an autopsy. But he was kicked out of the profession for suggesting such a thing just because of the sort of heretical nature of going against what the medical profession believes in. So,
yeah. And you're also getting it too from the distribution and reaction point of view from the unusual way that you made the film, the unusual format we talked a little bit about, and we touched on the footnotes, which I actually liked that. I thought that was a really, particularly in the internet age when everyone double checks anything, particularly in a film that could be a little controversial. I also find it really interesting the length of your archival clips that you use. I mean, some of those are pretty long. And did you also do that because we live in this internet age and people would say, oh, you're just taking stuff out of context. You're trying to manipulate your argument. Was that part of your decision to do that?
Absolutely. That's exactly why. Because it's done so often. We're so used to being manipulated that way. The mainstream news is the best at it. These little teeny sound bites. But documentary filmmakers do it too. And like the Dustin Canary testimony with the mother and her child, who's now still alive and well, nearly 20 years old now. Yeah, I wanted to play that from beginning to end so people saw her introduction and when it's over. I could have played so many more, but that was one of the most powerful ones to me. And that's exactly right. You answered my question for me.
Okay. It was so unusual when I was first watching the film. I said, what are you doing here? And then I realized as you were presenting the documents and the footnotes and such, I said, oh my gosh, he's being very clever in that, realizing we live in this age where everyone double checks and triple checks and Wikipedia and you name it. I mean, there'd be websites devoted to how you took everything out of context and how you tried to keep everything in context, which I thought was really, it was refreshing. And I think no matter what your subject matter was, and it's extraordinarily compelling, of course, but the fact that you went to those lengths, it was a very, very refreshing, because we've seen so many of these advocacy films that they're very entertaining. And you mentioned Michael Moore, very entertaining, but they take things out of context and construct their arguments in such a way that you don't know if you're being manipulated or not. So I thought that was pretty interesting that you did that.
Yeah. Thank you. And another thing, too, is that I really was preparing myself for the wrath of the so-called quackbusters and all the people ripping the film apart. And not a single person or entity has approached me or published anything contrary. It's been phenomenal. I have privately spoken to many oncologists. Like, I've had a cancer patient, for instance, who's, you know, and he shows the film to their oncologist. And, you know, and then she said, well, you've got to talk to this guy. He's going to be so supportive of it. And I get down to the nitty-gritty of actually speaking to him, and they just completely write me off. and I say, okay, well, if you want to write it off, I understand. But I attach to the email the peer-reviewed FDA-supervised data of just the brainstem glioma clinical trials. And I send it to him. And I say, what do you feel about this? This has never been done in our entire history of medicine. And this one individual, he's out in California, actually working for Stanford, I'll call it out, and he works in a progressive gene-targeted cancer study lab. And that's precisely what Brzezinski's doing. So he's spinning his wheels at Stanford with this little very, very sort of inferior sort of methods, while here you have something that's never been cured before, and yet he still will just slam the door and not want to hear about it. He doesn't want to see it. And it's time and again. And Brzezinski told me over and over, like, these people don't want to hear about it. and he's right. I really went into this really optimistically, thinking, no. When the doctor sees this, he's going to just go, oh my God. You know, he just doesn't know about it. And again, they go, oh my God, privately, some of them do. Sorry, but like the guy at Stanford, completely, they just won't even have the conversation. It's amazing. And some of these other sites that I've sort of trolled, and I haven't really tried to instigate them because I know how bad it could be, but there are a lot of so-called quackbuster sites with these very successful doctors who spend their spare time writing these blogs and going after all these, especially the autism sort of movement, it's so convoluted. And I really researched that too a little bit and met a lot of the sort of so-called autism movement people. The jury's still way out. I mean, it's not so easy just to say it's vaccines. But anyway, but they haven't touched this film, and it's been out for nearly a year. And I know that it's been brought into their labs. And again, I guess I should feel proud that
absolutely.
One more thing I'll say is that I know that people say that it is long, and I cover a lot of different things. But the main things that I covered in that film, the proof that it works, obviously, the state government level persecution, federal government level persecution, and then the NCI trials that were sponsored by the government that were rigged, and then the ending was actually new for everybody that had never really been let out before on a public scale. But the NCI trials especially were so important to point out what really happened and to prove that, because the average oncologist will just point back in the medical literature doctor and say, okay, no, you see right here, they published it in 1999, that the NCI, at their own sponsored trial, they conducted it and it didn't work. And that's a very common thing today when they want to protect themselves. We've seen this with ghostwriting in medical journal articles when they released Vioxx. Like, it's just, instead of the industry sort of writing and manipulating journal articles to sort of get their drugs more recognition or to cover up their drugs' harmful natures, you know, they can also use that as ammunition to try to suppress treatments like Brzezinski's. It goes both ways. So I just, thought that was an important one to point out in there. So.
What's happened since the documentary with Brzezinski? Do you have any updates on the story after the documentary?
Yeah, some exciting things. In November of 2009, like Brzezinski and a neurosurgeon and Suzanne Summers and another doctor in New York that treats cancer in a different way, they went on television, and ever since then, the FDA started really cracking down on allowing new patients into Brzezinski's clinical trials without first failing chemotherapy and radiation, and it caused a really big problem. That's sort of the rules anyway, but when they look at someone like a brainstem glioma patient in which they know never has been cured before, and it's like, what difference does it make? So they'll let them in what's called a special exception status. But just recently, and partly due to the film and maybe just my activism role, a lot of patients will email me saying, what do I do? The FDA is not letting me in. I say, well, I don't know what to tell you, except contact your politicians and see if they can help you. And so sure enough, boom, the Senator Cantwell of Washington State leaned on the FDA a few months ago, got this young 22-month-year-old girl into an FDA clinical trial for brain cancer. And ever since then, the doors have been open. Like, it's fascinating. So that's a little bit of a movement that's been made in that sense. I'm not allowed to say too much, and I haven't even been informed entirely, but there might be, and I don't want to jinx it, a really large entity outside of the United States that might be funding the phase 3 trials, which cost $150 million to complete.
Wow.
So that's exciting. It's a big maybe. This has happened before. Even the CEO of Pfizer contacted him 2 years ago about wanting to do this. I mean, again, another example of how they know. But that just completely dissolved quickly for whatever reason, sort of. But he's sort of becoming numb to it all dissolving when it comes to that. More and more patients are waking up and realizing that there is another option out there, and I think more patients are going to the clinic or at least investigating it. But that's really, I guess, about it. I am going to do a follow-up film that I'm working on now that sort of shows a whole other side of a gene-targeted treatment that Brzezinski has honed in, since he is so limited to only clinical trials to treat people with his actual invention. That's really sort of, so it's such a long sort of explanation. We can save that for another one.
So your next film is a follow-up of this documentary. Is that right?
Yeah. I want to do one more before I move on and do something else. I feel like the public needs to know.
And then where do you move on from there? Are you going to continue on in medicine, or is this going to be your niche, or what's your next subject after this?
I don't know. I'm interested in sort of anything that where politics and economics and sort of our system doesn't allow new innovation. That's so exciting to me, whether it be the electric car that was killed in 2003, or I heard about a guy in New Jersey, an engineer who built this amazing cheap technology to cover your roof, turn your tiles of your roof into solar panels, and he went to Congress and senators, and no one would touch it because there's no money in it, but he got a multi-million-dollar contract from China. It's just fascinating to me that sort of our system of competition stops scientific innovation. It's just, so I don't know what my next film will be.
Okay.
We'll find
Fair
out.
Enough.
So.
Fair enough.
All right.
Well, we really enjoyed the approach that you took with Brzezinski, and we hope that more documentarians will adopt that and stick to reason and logic rather than only emotional arguments. So thank you for a great movie, and thanks for coming on the show today and talking with us about Brzezinski the movie.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I'm really, it's exciting every time some people like yourselves that I've never met who watch it cold and, get it. It's very exciting.
So tell us how people can find the movie, whether online or order it from you or whatnot.
Sure. I just recently posted the first 36 minutes of the film for anyone to see for free. That covers the whole opening that we discussed earlier in the conversation. But BrzezinskiMovie.com, it's spelled B-U-R, Z as in zebra, Y, N as in Nancy, S, KIMovie.com, BrzezinskiMovie.com. It's also on Amazon, and the documentary film channel is going to start carrying it in their store as well really soon.
Oh, great.
But my website, you have sort of like the portal, you can find it all. And I added a whole bunch of clips, including the lengthy Canary testimony. I probably have 50% of the film online in some fashion for the world to see for free.
So. Great. Well, we definitely recommend that people go out there and actually, you know, purchase the DVD or find a way to see the whole thing, because it is well made, well reasoned, and very impactful. So we'll put a link on the Movie Film Show website. Most of our listeners are familiar with that, so they can find that easily as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
And we look forward to your next follow-up to the Brzezinski story.
Absolutely. I'll get you guys a copy as soon as it's done. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.